Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
In the flesh.
In person.
In the same room.
We're here.
It's amazing. Okay, Alyssa, I just want to kick off this week's episode by asking you this. Is this the summer of 69 indictments?
Is it? Do we know?
How many indictments does he have? You have your computer.
Hold on, we have to Google.
Let's Google.
See. Okay.
Okay, how many indictments?
Oh, damn, Erin.
How many?
Okay, so Donald Trump faces 34 felony counts in Florida.
Okay.
In New York, he faces 34 felony counts in connection with hush money payments to a porn star.
Okay.
In Florida, he faces 40 felony counts for hoarding classified documents and impeding efforts to retrieve them. So that's 74.
And then there's four in D.C.
So
78. How old is Donald Trump?
Hold on. How old is Trump? Oh, my God. He's 77.
Oh, what a big special boy.
One to grow on.
One indictment
77 and one
every,
to grow on.
Every wonderful year of his life.
And he's not even done.
Oh. 78 indictments and counting.
You think he's going to get a perfect score? You think he'll get up to 100?
Oh, I would love that.
Oh, thoughts and prayers.
This week, we're joined by Evan Kleinman, Megan Gailey, and Kieran Deal to take on the following questions. Should there be cameras in Trump's trials? What can the Midwest teach us about keeping the fight alive, even in red states? What's the worst dish one of LA's favorite food journalists was served as a child? And do the strikes expose Hollywood as a multi-level marketing scheme? All this and more right now. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast where we crack the case of Scooby-Doo level plots against America.
We are Scooby-Dooing it.
We're Scooby-Don'ting it. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Trump indictment. I know everybody who's in political media is talking about the Trump indictment. I don't know if people outside of political media or...
I feel like they have bigger fish to fry.
Like their backyard being 110 degrees.
Exactly.
You know, bigger fish
droughts,
to avoid.
Floods, you name it.
Yeah.
Bigger things going on.
Other things going on that are more directly impactful to their everyday life. But this is really important to American history.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that Donald Trump 2024's, like, the Republican Party platform is basically Donald Trump shouldn't go to jail.
That's all it is.
It's the entire political platform. Tuesday when the indictment came down, which thank you for that.
Yeah, we didn't get Wednesday.
We didn't get Wednesday. Thank you for that. I came up with a list of indictment-related puns that I think maybe we could...
I am ready.
Okay.
Pun away.
Affidavit and confused. Because it's like summer and Dazed and Confused is kind of a
obviously
summer movie. This one I actually wrote down before I saw the title of Wednesday's What a Day. Do the indict thing. Because it's hot.
Not summer. Nonstop, Erin.
Uh-huh. Court fun in the summertime.
Yeah, I love that one.
Okay. Oh, those summer indicts.
I love that one, too.
Okay. Summer of 69 federal charges.
Now we know it's more.
Not 78. Oh,
God. Sad.
Geez.
So good.
So many. Have you ever seen The Arraigned?
So that one really takes my breath away.
Okay. Good. Okay. I was going to, you know, I was also picturing like a movie poster,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's like a kind of a large man swimming in the water. And
yeah.
Below the large man, you see like Jack Smith's giant head coming up.
Like Jaws, you mean?
Yes, except it says Laws.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep, that's really stupid, but I could art direct political cartoons.
It's not stupid, though. It is apropos of the news.
Yep, for everything, there is a treason.
Yes.
Sorry.
But
I can't stop. Okay, Alyssa, my first and perhaps the most important question about Donald Trump's indictment is, what do you think Liz Cheney is doing right now?
You know, what do you think Liz is doing? I feel like she's having a margarita.
Yeah.
I think she's having a margarita.
I think she had one of her servants make her a margarita.
That's probably correct.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the work has paid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, she's out of a job.
I mean, does she need a job?
No.
I feel like someone as rich as Liz Cheney having a job is just taking work away from people who need.
No, she's just, you know, there's a little villain laugh. Her feet are up. She's having a margarita.
Yeah.
And she's enjoying that this is probably the these series of indictments that have made Trump actually sweat.
I picture the Cheney family lair, because it's a lair.
Yeah.
I picture it to look like the bar where Gaston sings that song in Beauty and the Beast. Like the walls are covered with taxidermy. And it's in like Wyoming. It's one of those like cosplay rich people.
Oh, I think that's entirely true. I mean, the documentary about Cheney was called The Angler. I mean, it was all about fish and mounting fish on the wall.
Yeah, but he didn't. They pretend to hunt and fish. It's like drag for rich people. They pretend that they're blue collar. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what's going on. I was watching some coverage of the indictment on a cable news channel.
Did it make you cringe?
Extremely cringe. I'm not going to name it, but I was watching some of the coverage, and one of the people suggested that it was imperative that TV cameras be allowed in the courtroom. What do you make of that?
Exhausting. Do we really need to give a man who has built his entire life and a vast part of his empire around produced television?
Don't let him on TV.
Aren't we just giving him the stage that he so wants?
Him on TV.
What is the upside? Either he is a martyr to his followers, or he's a hero. There is no upside for the rest of us.
Right. There's absolutely no way that they would watch him on TV and think it was anything but badass. And to see 100%. Him on TV every day, I think would be – here's what they should do. They should hire a really mean courthouse artist.
Yes.
That's the way.
That's it.
I mean, report on it.
Pump those pictures out. Let us just do it all as like a cartoon, which is what he is.
Exactly. I think they should report on the trial. We should hear from what happens inside the courtroom. But cameras inside the courtroom.
No, ma'am.
Have we learned no lessons?
None.
Stop letting him be on
TV. Don't give him a microphone or a camera.
It will not. You can't. You can't be defeated by giving him his favorite weapon.
It literally makes him stronger.
Yeah, don't do it. So, that's all I think we have to say about.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of indictments.
I want to talk a little bit about the Midwest.
We're loving the Midwest.
I think that a lot of people who live in the Midwest, I think it's easy to get discouraged in a lot of these places, like Ohio, Wisconsin, even, you know, Michigan, whatever.
Right.
But there's actually, you know, what's happening in the Midwest right now in certain Midwestern states kind of shows that if you just stick around, have some tenacity, work your ass
off.
Gumption, elbow grease, then you can come out on top. Like Ohio.
God bless.
I have said
keep
such,
on keeping on,
I've
Ohio.
Said mean things about Ohio.
I mean, look, as a former Badger, I had a T-shirt that said, oh, how I hate Ohio State.
Yeah, well, that's a thing that you're supposed to say.
That's what we did, but we're here to say, yay, Buckeyes.
Ohio is really kind of an upside surprise in the post-Dobbs landscape. So this summer and fall, there's two important elections that could lead to voters enshrining abortion rights in the state. As it stands right now, abortions in Ohio are legal up to 22 weeks, which is actually, it puts it ahead of a lot of states where there's a lot more restrictions. This November, there is a measure on the ballot that would make it a constitutionally guaranteed right for Ohioans to access abortion up to the point of viability and past the point of viability if the doctor who's treating the patient determines that it's necessary to preserve her life and health.
Right.
But because the polling on that looked really good and because they submitted almost twice as many signatures as they needed to get it on the ballot, the Secretary of State just was like, yep, it's on the ballot. There is another measure that Republicans have snuck in that would essentially kneecap the power of Ohio voters to change their state constitution, and that is State Issue 1, which voters will decide on August 8th, which is next week. So in that special election, voting yes on Issue 1 will make it so it's more difficult for voters to make changes in the way that their state is run. Voting no means that they still retain power. I don't know why, as a voter, you would be like, yeah, you know what? Don't let me do as much stuff.
Well, it's pretty interesting because, you know, Aaron, the jiggery pokery never stops. And so State Issue 1 would require 60% support up from 50% plus one for an issue, which is funny because I think if you read the news closely, you see that the enshrining abortion has a favorability of 57%.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
That's interesting.
You think the Republicans read some polls?
It seems like maybe they did. It seems like maybe they did. But I think what's happening in Ohio is something that's really important for people to realize. Right now, you know, early voting is looking great.
Mm-hmm.
It's smashing records. The August 8th election, early voting is smashing records. All signs are pointing to the fact that issue one is going to fail.
Right.
Which paves the way for abortion.
I'm knocking on wood right now.
Exactly. It doesn't mean you should vote.
You've got to vote.
And tell everyone that you know who lives in Ohio and can legally vote in Ohio.
It's like Kansas, never forget.
Yeah, do not forget Kansas. Exactly. Ohio, even a state that is sort of, you know, as red as mm-hmm. Ohio, still has a line where voters
like,
are like,
it's too much.
Too much.
Too much. You went too far.
Too much. And so right now, Ohioans are on the cusp of actually enshrining abortion rights in their state, which is more than a lot of people have in the U.S. And it's like, you guys are almost there, and it's so—
You can do it.
You can do it. We're with you. Tell us what we can do to help.
Well, Erin, to find out how you can help make sure Ohio voters are informed and ready to vote ahead of the August special election at votesaveamerica.com/Ohio.
Nice. That's a really easy URL to remember.
So easy.
Ooh, you know what?
Hmm.
We got to give a shout out to—
America's Dairyland?
America's Dairyland.
Erin, Judge Janet— Can we just, we're so excited today. The ideological majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court shifted Tuesday when liberal justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz was sworn in at the state capitol to a 10-year term, giving liberals now a 4-3 majority on the court.
What? Yeah, it's exciting.
I mean, we know this. Everything is up for grabs now. They have a number of issues from union rights to redistricting to abortion to election laws that are likely to make their way before the court in the coming months and years. And this is incredible news because this election, which we covered, the most expensive judicial contest in U.S. history, was seen as a referendum on the state's 1849 law, which effectively was banning abortion and was reactivated less than a year beforehand under the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization. What?
Yeah. Yeah,
Judge
so I
Janet.
Mean, right now, abortion is effectively illegal in Wisconsin. I mean, yes. I know that there are, like, exceptions, blah, 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 but just effectively, it is illegal.
Yes.
Luckily, it is legal in surrounding states, but not everybody who lives in Wisconsin has the ability to travel to surrounding states to obtain abortion care.
Right.
And so that's just, it's not acceptable. No, people in
nope.
Wisconsin deserve better. I do want to point out that Judge Janet replaced a justice named Pat Rogensack. Which is an extreme patience.
Patience, Rogensack.
Pat Rogensack, which is, it's a terrible name, but it's a very Wisconsin name.
It's a very Wisconsin name, and it is a name that has now been defeated.
I also want to point out that in Protasiewicz's election, to the credit of voters in Wisconsin, it was not even like, she blew past everybody's expectations.
It was a trouncing.
It was a curb stomping.
Yes, curb stomping, even better.
It was a trouncing, a curb stomping. It was really, really definitive. And Wisconsin is largely seen as one of the most contested states in the country.
Yep.
In the 2024 election, it will obviously, there's a lot of math that says everything comes down to Wisconsin in 2024. Now, we don't, you know, a lot of things can change.
A lot
change.
Of things can happen.
We
but
don't know.
This is significant nonetheless in every
very,
way.
Very, very important. But not everything in the Midwest is great. You know, we've got, you know, success stories like Wisconsin,
yep.
which is, you know, step one of several steps that need to unfuck the state. But step one was a big one. We've got Michigan.
Yep.
Great big. Big Gretch profile.
Big Gretch making things happen.
Yeah, big profile for of her in The New Yorker.
Check it out if you haven't.
Which is sort of like one of those things where it's like, I wonder what she's got planned.
What's Big Gretch up to?
What's Big Gretch thinking?
Down the line. Don't everybody get mad.
Michigan people don't get mad. Biden people don't get mad.
Everyone calm down.
Everybody calm
but
down.
But a future that is bright for Big Gretch is bright for all of us.
Exactly. Michigan flipped everything and is now making historic
yep.
changes. Minnesota recreational marijuana.
Legal
as of August 1st.
So incredible. Also, always doing the right things. Minnesota is also expunging records for folks with marijuana-related offenses.
Uh-huh. And my brother is a public defender in the state of Minnesota. It's pretty good.
Does he get to go around now and be like, you get expunged. You get expunged.
I'm not sure. I should send him a text message and be like, hey, are you expunging today? How's the expunging?
What's the expungement
going
up to?
Going up in Duluth? How's that going? We also have in Minnesota also passed paid parental leave.
Right.
It's one of the best paid parental leave programs in the mm-hmm. country. Minnesota did it with a one-seat majority.
One seat majority,
which is super exciting, but not everything is rosy.
No,
in the Middle West, Indiana, after a year long fight, a near total abortion ban is going into effect. In Indiana, the ban would prohibit abortions at any point during pregnancy, except if the woman's life or health is at serious risk. And let's point out, just to echo a point that our pal Jess Valenti has made mm-hmm. many times,
yeah.
these exceptions don't really exist
right.
on like a practical
right.
level. They don't really actually exist. Hospitals are shit scared of getting licenses pulled, of getting sued. These exceptions are not in any way
right.
exceptions. They are on paper exceptions to make people feel less evil
mm-hmm.
for passing these laws. But
like, see, we're not punitive.
Yeah, but you are.
You are.
You absolutely are. It's gross. So yeah, this is a sad lost battle in the state of Indiana. The law has now taken effect, like for good.
Yes.
Which is really unfortunate. Now, in the upper Midwest, abortion remains illegal in Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin in a few months might
be better.
Flip back. But for now, there's a bunch of states where it's just not legal.
It's not good.
Nope, not good. Illinois, however.
J.B. Pritzker, out there killing it.
The Monopoly Man.
Being an ally. He is the Monopoly Man. We mean that with so much love.
I mean, he's you know, I mean that with like a medium amount of love. I feel like
he is, you know, but I appreciate, you know, he had that commencement speech that went viral. I feel mm-hmm. like he's a very thoughtful governor. And in a state that is, you know, borders Indiana,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
And Wisconsin. And Iowa.
He's like, here's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, we're like enshrining everything we can to make sure that people have what they need to live a healthy and happy life.
Yeah, I have to say, if you know an OBGYN or an abortion provider in Illinois, you know, be super nice to them. I think they're really probably over.
Do you know there are only 66 OBGYNs in South Dakota?
What?
66 in the whole state, Erin.
Oh, my God. They could all live in that corn palace together. That's how few OBGYNs there are.
It is. They're calling this prenatal care deserts.
Oh.
Because in some places, it is so far, because most of those 66 are in Rapid City or Sioux Falls. South Dakota is a pretty
not,
big state.
It is not a small state.
It's not a small state.
If you've ever driven across it, you know it's not a small state. And it's not close to anything. Like, that's another thing. It's not like, yeah, I live pretty far from Rapid City, so I can just, like, zip on up to Bismarck, North Dakota.
But at the same time, if you were an OBGYN, would you choose to go live in South Dakota?
No.
Would you choose to go live in South Dakota by itself?
I mean, probably not my first pick mm-hmm. at the top of all of our favorite Midwest states.
No, and I would say, you know, this is something that advocates have been like warning will happen.
Yep.
You know, there are going to be prenatal care deserts as the environment out there gets less and less habitable to OBGYNs.
Right.
Like, people can't go there for training. People can't go. People, why would they want to? And it's just not going well for people. We said this was going to happen.
We've been telling you.
We've been saying it's going to happen. It's happening in Idaho as well,
yep.
where they're shutting down units of hospitals that are supposed to help people give birth. So you could be the most pro-life person in the world, and it's still going to like screw you over.
Yeah,
it's gonna screw your care over. You're screwing everybody. Over. This is, ugh. Let's see. What else do we have going on? You know, Iowa continues to be a bit of a shit show, but there's still a lot of fight going on there.
Yeah, don't count Iowa out.
Don't count Iowa. I'm not counting any
We're not counting anyone
any out. Of the Midwest out.
Kansas, never forget.
Kansas, never forget Kansas. And also, you know, abortion rights are a winning ballot measure.
Yep.
And when you give it to people to vote, they vote to keep abortion rights. They yep. want the government out of their doctor's office.
Between a person and their doctor. That's what abortion should be.
Absolutely. We got a roast.
Oh, God. Erin.
Are we going to have to are we going to use the C word
we're
and
not,
get in trouble?
We're not using any words because we don't even have to, Erin.
It's implied.
We can state the facts of the case.
It's implied.
Congress shrew Trisha Cotham. Erin, here's a funny one. She, you know, she was a Democrat.
We're talking about North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Okay.
North Carolina. She was allegedly a Democrat, and then she switched. So she switched. She became a Republican so she could vote against abortion.
And she gave them a supermajority, right?
Giving them a supermajority. And Erin, guess what? It turns out her middle name is just George Santos because she was recruited by Republicans to run as a Democrat. They tricked. Erin, how is this not fraud? Oh, it is.
It is fraud.
And she is trying to backpedal. She had very famously in 2015 spoken on the House floor about her own medically necessary abortion for an ectopic pregnancy. She talked about how essential abortion was. Now she says, oh, that wasn't an abortion.
Yes, it was, Trisha.
Well, it was in 2015, Erin. But Trisha, in 2023, when she wants Tucker Carlson to have her on his Twitter show
oh,
she's
God.
Like, it's not. She's saying she didn't have an abortion.
Yes,
she had a miscarriage.
You did, Trisha.
Which was a spontaneous abortion.
Trisha.
But you know what she wants us to know, Erin? She's still the same person.
An evil bitch.
And a very untruthful George Santosian congressperson.
Nice pause. I know what you wanted to
representative
insert into that pause.
Representative.
She is awful. She is an awful person. The goings on of, like, you know, what happened in North Carolina, where basically one person pretending to be a Democrat in time to switch to give Republicans a veto-proof majority, one woman can endanger the rights of everybody who lives in North Carolina, one fucking liar.
By being a fraud.
By being a fucking liar. Okay, one woman can do that. Also, you know, with the Trump indictment, to bring it around full circle.
Oh, please do.
The more we learn about it, the more it's like, this was a Scooby-Doo level plot.
Yes.
And this was like, it was almost enough to topple the American experiment. So how good, look, America's fine. I live here. I care about it enough to want to make it better. It has some problems. I think one of the problems is that it was not designed to be strong enough to withstand a fucking Scooby-Doo level plot to overturn the government. It's like when I was watching coverage of the indictment, there, you know, they were talking like, oh, this is a very dark day in American history. It is a dark day in American history. I felt like I was watching employees of the haunted amusement park talking about how it was a dark day in the haunted amusement park on the day that we pulled the rubber ghost costumes off. And it turns out it was the cranky neighbor who lived next door. I mean, like, yes, it is a dark day in American history, but it's even darker that our system is so in need of a giant update that it is held together with chewing gum and paper clips.
It should not surprise us that this happened because George Santos, who probably has 30 passports with different names in his closet,
they're all
became
like,
a member of the U.S. Congress.
But his passports are probably like, my daughter has like a Minnie Mouse purse, and inside her Minnie Mouse purse is like
absolutely.
A little fake plastic credit card. That's what they probably
but
look like.
But when you
like.
Say Scooby-Dooing.
Like, oh, that looks right.
When you say Scooby-Dooing, it makes me laugh so hard because all I think of is Mattson in that episode of Succession yelling at the Roy brothers, be like, what are you, Scooby-Dooing me? You're Scooby-Dooing me right now. And like, honestly, yes, everyone's up to Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
They're Scooby-Dooing.
Zoinks.
Zoink, Scoob.
You know?
Yes.
Zoink, Scoob. It just, it doesn't, it feel like we need a top-to-bottom refresh. We need to fix this because
we need to bring Scrappy-Doo back. Scrappy-Doo fixed shit.
Scrappy-Doo made it the worst. I think Scrappy-Doo was to Scooby-Doo what Shemp was to the Three Stooges in that he ruined it.
Okay, fair.
I think that this is a system that was not designed to last as long as it has lasted with no meaningful updates, you know? And like, it took over, it took like, what, more than two and a half years to charge like the people responsible for a coup.
That happened on television.
The main guy, yeah, it happened on TV. We have like this long trail of evidence and it took 2.5 years. Like, the system is not.
It needs a reboot.
It needs a refresh.
Little alt, control, delete.
It needs a little nip, little tuck. It needs some updating because, man, imagine if any of this were tried to be, were carried out by people who knew what they were doing. You know, more Scooby-Doo level antics. In Florida, there were some issues with people running for office that had very similar names to Democrats. Do you remember this story? Oh my gosh. It's complete. I'll send it to you. It is like the most basic, a kid came up with this at recess level shit is capable
of
like.
I did not remember this at all.
Yeah. I'll send it to you and we'll put it in our show notes, listeners, because it is.
We need Scooby-Dooing.
There's a lot of problems. And we should not be defeated by a bunch of, like, disgruntled
cartoons.
Neighbors in ghost costumes or werewolf masks or whatever. This is ridiculous. Okay, rant over. Let's take a quick break.
Just a quick one.
When we come back, we've got an interview that will bring us down a notch, soothe our souls.
Make everything pleasant.
But also make me very hungry.
That too.
So stick around.
Today's guest is Native Angelino, pioneering food radio personality of NPR's Southern California KCRW Good Food radio show and podcast, which explores food and how it intersects with every aspect of human life. She's been celebrated by James Beard, and she's done over 6,000 interviews, and says of food and cooking, quote, "It's about creating hospitality in your own life and welcoming people how you are able in the place where you are," which we love. Evan Kleinman, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you so much. This is such a strange pleasure, you know. I don't get interviewed very much.
Oh, well.
I'm always on the other end of the conversation.
Well, we have
questions
for you.
We've got questions for you. Awesome. I hope I have answers.
Yes.
All right. So in 1998, you became the host of Good Food. Why radio? What did you love about radio? And is podcasting as much fun?
So in 1998, I had a restaurant that I opened in 1984 here in LA on Melrose called Angeli. And I was, you know, doing my work. I was really involved with slow food. I was the head of the LA slow food chapter. And so I was occasionally on Good Food, which was originally started with the hosts, Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Vinegar of Now Sogolo. And, you know, they were one of the pioneering Food Network personalities, two of the pioneering Food Network personalities. And because their life was like blowing up, they wanted to recede from the radio situation. And the host of the executive producer of the show, Jennifer Farrow, who is now the head of KCRW, asked me if I would step in. And I said, sure. So for like 10 years, I did both jobs, you know, had a restaurant and did the show. You know, it because the arc of me doing the work has been so long, like from the very, very beginning of the internet to now, it's just so different how one puts the show together, the amount of resources we have. Podcasting, I love podcasting. I've always listened to radio. I was one of those kids who grew up listening to NPR during dinner, you know. My mom had it on all the time. And of course, you know, my whole teenage years, music was all about the radio. The radio was how you engaged with music. It wasn't, you know, create your curated Spotify list. If you were lucky, somebody handed you a little playlist lovingly put together on a tape. So radio was always a part of my life. And I think it suited me because in the real world, I tended, especially then, to be extremely shy. So radio allowed me to just interact with people one at a time through this amazingly intimate medium where you're in a room, you have these headphones on, the person you're interviewing most of the time isn't even in the room with you. And it allows for a kind of focus and presence in the moment that I just took to, that I guess I really kind of needed in my life, because I tend to be ADD and all over the place.
Same. We were in NPR house also, and I think I was listening to podcasts before they were podcasts. I would like time my Saturdays around, wait, don't tell me.
Car talk.
It was car talk, because I lived in Chicago at the time. It was like car talk, then wait, don't tell me, then This American Life.
Right.
And I like would time my day around it before podcasts existed. So I'm right with you there.
Okay, so Evan, you grew up in the 60s, and you-ish.
Here in L.A.
Here in L.A., and you grew up reading cookbooks.
Well, of course. Well, I shouldn't say of course. I was such a nerdy kid, I guess. I mean, I grew up reading. I was a voracious reader because, you know, so super shy. So my life wasn't an extroverted exterior life so much. It was more a life of the mind.
Right.
Would have been nice to learn to move my body a little more, be more fully present in the world. But that voracious reading at a certain point started to center around food because my mother was not a good cook.
Wait, what was her worst dish? Is there anything?
Oh, yes. Well, so it was the 60s. It was a time when, you know, convenience food met experimentation with sometimes really unfortunate results. So she once made this chicken dish that was a casserole that involved chicken, rice, some sort of cream of something soup. It must have been celery or mushroom or just chicken, cream of chicken, and a jar of apricot preserves.
Whoa. Whoa.
What more can one say?
I mean, I can't imagine what that felt like on your palate.
The texture.
Yeah, the texture.
It needs like a little crunch,
yeah,
right?
Rice sometimes had unexpected crunch.
Oh, my gosh.
On the top layer. And she never, ever made dessert. I mean, dessert in our house was, you know, these gallons of supermarket ice cream that would stay in the freezer where it gets super icy. So I taught myself how to, like, make cookies.
Right.
And then I realized, reading cookbooks, that it was a way, just like novels are, it was a way into the larger world. And I was just completely fascinated by, you know, the 19th century world of hospitality and dining and all of the elaborate tablescapes. And I mean, I grew up, you know, I once asked my mother if we were poor, and she said, no, we're not poor. We just don't have any money. So, you know, single female child.
Right.
Single parent mom. And it was a way for me to just see these other worlds, and especially cookbooks that came from other places in the world. And it wasn't even so much the food or the recipes that intrigued me. It was the introductory materials and the headnotes, the little bits that start each recipe, the stories. And so I think I learned really early on how food carries story and how powerful they can be.
Well, sometimes when fancy people talk about food, it can be very classist and like esoteric, kind of alienating. But you have created this kind of food community, and you center curiosity, accessibility, inclusivity. And some people call you the fairy godmother of the LA food scene as a result of that. So can you talk about why that's been important to you, like inclusivity and bringing people in?
So I grew up in Silver Lake in the 60s, a very, very, very different place.
I was going to say.
Than it is now. It was...
No Erewhon to speak.
Oh my gosh. It's like, I mean, it stayed similar for so long because it's so geographically kind of in its own little kind of hidden area. But Las Feliz, Silver Lake, and Echo Park was my hood. And I went to public school because everybody went to public school. And I have never had a more diverse experience in my life than heretofore than I did growing up at that time in that place. And it's not just all of the ethnic diversity, racial diversity, religious diversity, but it was also the economic diversity of everybody going to public school. So you would have kids of gardeners and janitors going to school with kids of doctors and judges. And we would all go over to each other's house after school. And early on, I became a voyeur. I think that kind of goes along with being an only child.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just fascinated how people lived in these houses where different languages were spoken. And you would walk into the house and the houses smelled different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that my food embrace, or my embrace to people through food, has always been very wide because that's how I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about cookbooks a little bit, but here's a question for you. Do you follow any of the food trends on TikTok?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, this is terrific.
I spend way too much time on TikTok.
Which are you into?
I have to say that I have a little bottle of eye drops.
Stop it from when you've scrolled too long?
Yeah.
Stop it. Evan Kleinman.
It's
no,
terrible.
Ma'am.
Oh my gosh. It's really terrible. And I have to set a timer.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so what draws you down the rabbit hole?
Well, the thing I love about TikTok, my For You page, is just people. It's that same thing. It's the same thing of my childhood, only right. expanded throughout the world and throughout all the states. And so that voyeur in me of just listening to people and, quote, meeting people that I would never meet in my daily life,
right.
who share little snippets, is just endlessly, not just fascinating, like looking at a, you know, insect, like pinned down on a sheet of paper, but just life-affirming. It really makes me feel better in these times of feeling so, like, horrified and scared mm-hmm. so much of the time. And food on TikTok, I really try and be careful because the algorithm of TikTok is so incredibly tight and responsive. I'm not really interested in having being inundated with food on TikTok.
Right.
So I'm extremely careful.
You have to be. If not, you'll have nothing.
Oh my gosh.
But posts of people smearing raw meat on the counter and trying to make some sort of monster meatloaf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That clearly has all sorts of bacteria in it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, that can be too much. Having said that, though, I make recipes. I have incorporated recipes into my daily repertoire that I've gotten from TikTok.
Really?
Yeah.
Like which what? Ones?
Tell us so yeah. we can do it too.
Well, the first one was from Unicorns in the Kitchen, mm-hmm. and it's Barbary bread. So it's a Persian flatbread. And it's her recipe was just so easy to make. And I make it a lot. Another one that I did that became a pandemic staple for me during lockdown from Salty Cocina was making flour tortillas with cream cheese.
Wow.
Like,
what?
Who knew? For me, it kind of like broke that mental barrier
mm-hmm.
of, no, I can't really make these and roll them out and have them come out good and have them stay good for a couple of days.
Right.
That just like cracked the code for me. It was perfect. Who else? Recently, I learned about this cabbage salad or cabbage chip kind of just snack from a Japanese woman named Sugi. And it's just this simple mixture of cabbage that you throw some dashi, some garlic powder, some salt, a couple of other things on it, put it in a Ziploc bag, move it around, and then put it in a bowl, and then you could just snack on that.
Oh,
I'm hungry.
So, but that is like really, really addicting. And then there's this young man who I'm not sure what his name is. Maybe somebody will tell me after this if it's Logan or if it's Justin from Ottawa, this younger kid who is not Korean, but is just, he cooks like a Korean grandmother. And I love watching his videos.
Okay. What's an ingredient you cook with that you never thought you'd cook with?
Huh. That's really hard because I've been cooking for like more 65 years.
So what's the newest one that you've added to your...
Yeah.
I mean, the condiment situation is constantly getting out of control. And and yesterday I interviewed Pierre Thiam, mm-hmm. who's this amazing Senegalese chef and cooking personality who concentrates on the cooking of West Africa. And every time I see a West African cookbook come across my door, so to speak, I always feel like I want to go on those websites and just buy all those condiments. Mm-hmm. And I have not done it because I'm like, oh my God, more condiments. But I think I'm actually going to pull the trigger this time, and I'm going to get like egusi, you know, the melon seeds, and I'm going to get different spice blends so that I can make some of his food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things I have during the pandemic, about 20 young chefs sent me their chili crisp.
Wow, that's a lot of chili crisp.
Well, yeah. It was a pivot, right?
Right, yeah.
They were all trying to make money. And in the end, I ended just putting them all together in one jar.
Whoa.
I'll never be able to repeat how good that chili crisp is.
It was the Avengers Endgame of
exactly,
chili crisps.
Exactly.
Every
it's
single
like the
character.
Voltron of chili crisps.
Spider-Man's in here.
Yeah.
We got Iron Man.
Catwoman.
We got...
yeah.
Wait, that's the wrong universe.
Whatever.
Yeah. Like seafood, mushrooms. I mean, yeah. But... I just use so much of everything. I can't think of something that is really
new. Chili crisp stew is pretty good.
Yeah, huh. I mean, it's good on ice cream. It's good on noodles and with butter.
It's good on eggs.
It's really good on eggs. I also am devoted to pomegranate molasses.
Oh, yeah. I use that. I made buffalo this past Friday. I cooked like a buffalo tenderloin, bison
oh,
tenderloin.
Wow.
And I used pomegranate molasses in the reduction.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
It was great. It's the first time I've ever done it.
Yeah, everybody who uses balsamic vinegar, which isn't balsamic vinegar, whatever, in their braise reductions should really switch to pomegranate molasses.
Oh, wow.
You heard it here first.
Also, cocktails.
Oh.
Yes, I have.
What?
I have done that. I have, you know, because it's like you just shake it up with like a little tequila and put it on ice.
Ah,
so good.
Oh my goodness.
So good.
Well, I know what I'm having this evening. Okay, so do you have a summer garden?
I shouldn't laugh. I've gone through so many iterations of gardens in my life because I've been living in the same place for years. I at one point had a little mini orchard in the backyard, but it became a rat buffet.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tore it out. And at the beginning of the pandemic, when I was like sitting, you know, in my place looking out at the garden, it was like looking out at a prison yard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dead dirt, dirty, horrible concrete block fence. And I decided that I would put in a native flower garden
mm-hmm.
because, you know, water.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not such a good gardener that I want to waste all that water, and I can go to a farmer's market. But I do grow tomatoes in containers every summer, cucumbers, and peppers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the triads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found in California those are the three that kind of that
can
take off.
Survive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna plus one to the wildflower garden. So like we rent, we don't own our house, but we have this like area in between the sidewalk and the street that was just like a dog bathroom when we first moved in. And over and before like winter hit last year, I surrounded it with like a little wire fence, and I just mixed up a bunch of wildflower seeds with some dirt. I just threw it there, and I was like, what's going to happen? And it grew. I have like
Isn't
a little.
Isn't that the greatest feeling?
I have like a little meadow now, and there's so many bees and butterflies, and it used to be just like, and people stop and take pictures and look at it. And
it's so life affirming. Every morning I get my coffee, I go outside, and I mean, I look at the minutiae of what's happened since the day before.
I do the same thing. I do exactly the same. I'm like, ooh, these little poppies are coming up. Like,
yes. I got one black raspberry this year.
Wow.
And I nurtured it, and then the bunnies ate it, and that was fine.
But that means you're going to get a lot more next
Fingers
year.
Fingers crossed. It's my black caps are my favorite.
I mean, I have this blood orange tree that I planted a long time ago. One New Year's Eve, I bought all these citrus trees to give away as gifts to staff. And And for 10 years, there was no fruit. And I have a friend who's just an incredible rare fruit tree grower in her backyard. And she said, you need to pull out that tree. It's a fruit tree. If you're not, it's not giving you fruit, forget about it. And she said, well, you know what you could do? You could try beating on it with a shovel. She said, I've heard that that will make them start to bear fruit.
And?
So I had a friend come over and beat the heck out of it with the shovel. And then the next year, one branch got flowers and gave me blood oranges. And then the year after that, the entire tree.
Wow.
Now it's 30 feet tall.
Beat your fruit trees.
Beat your fruit. You heard it here first.
We are breaking news today all over the place.
I think it goes into like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. I better pump out, you know, life before right. I go.
Right. It was like me when I turned 37.
That's like evergreen trees. When they get stressed and they have tons of pine cones when they're really stressed.
There
so.
You go.
Right. I was stressed out. I'm like, I'm getting old. I'm 37. Time to have a baby. And I did.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. You're not getting old.
Well, I'm 40 now. So she's like almost two.
I'm not getting, I mean, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go there. I will just say I have decades on you. Decades. Well, mastery is a beautiful thing in life. You know, we talk about mastery, but we often don't connect it to age. And the word wisdom seems to hold a lot of crone-like things for women.
Mm-hmm.
Mastery.
Mastery.
Yeah.
It's our new word.
We got it.
We have it. Okay. So, Evan, before you go, we love KCRW and we love public radio. Is there a way our audience can support you and your show?
Oh my gosh, you are a queen to ask me this question.
We've been following the fundraising drive.
A queen. Yeah. You know, NPR stations have these fundraising drives, and they're really important, especially now, when we are at risk of losing federal funding more than we ever have been. And although we rely more on people to give, that federal funding is something stable that we rely on. And we do rely on actual humans who listen. So if anybody wants to support the show, you can go to kcrw.com/join and join at any level. We will inundate you with merch. And I mean, KCRW is such an amazing station for how it goes out in the world to engage community. I mean, there's over 250 music events a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our huge pie contest at UCLA in the spring. And 10,000 people came to the last one.
Whoa.
We only planned for five. So,
oh my God, you're like Lollapalooza.
You had to cut the pies into twice as many pieces.
It was like, uh-oh. And then we have our tortilla contest coming up, which I do with Gustavo Arellano.
Oh, my gosh.
And that is just so much fun. Four of us have been tasting tortillas for a couple weeks now. We start with 64.
Oh, wow. Just like the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. Whoa, it's a bracket.
Sweet 16.
Yeah. Nice. It's a bracket. And then we're going to have the actual tournament at the beginning of October at the finals, and that'll be at Smorgasburg.
Oh my goodness, I'm so hungry now.
I know.
Only ate a Starbucks wrap on the way here, which I regret.
And I haven't eaten anything.
Oh no.
I haven't either.
But you were talking to your previous guest the words hot dog.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and did you start?
Well, I'm such a suggestive eater. Like, it's going to be an earworm now until I go eat a hot dog.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think I want a hot dog too, but Chicago style with the pickle and
the best.
Yeah, I agree.
Where do you get those?
I don't know. I have not found them in LA.
Yeah, I was in Chicago recently, and I got to have a really great one while being, you know, showered with insults.
Oh, Wiener Circle.
Yeah, it was
Wiener
the greatest. Circle.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect.
I've been there too, and I made it out alive, and I was like, this hot dog tastes even better after I got yelled at, which is weird, and maybe I should bring this up with my therapist. Evan Kleinman, thank you so much. We loved having you. This is a great conversation.
Thank you so much.
You should come back. We'll have more
of that. I would love it. I would love it. So much fun.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the Attenzione Pickpocket of American politics podcasts. Our first panelist, we're all here in the same room.
We're here.
We're all here in the same room. So, I mean, I feel like weird introducing somebody to people who are already here, but this is for our listeners because it's not a visual medium. Our first panelist is a comedian, and she's going on tour in the Midwest in September. Great time to not be on the West Coast.
And I love corn.
Oh, same. She's co-host of I Love My Kid But, recently featured in a billboard in something called Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of it, which is a new parenting podcast that is also funny. Megan Gailey, welcome to Hysteria.
Hello. I hope the naked cowboy saw me. Is he gone? Is the naked cowboy still there?
I haven't seen him since COVID.
Oh no. Another COVID casualty.
Haven't seen him since COVID, but no, now I'm going to Google and check out his status.
Okay. Don't look up his voting record.
Yeah. The naked cowboy is nakedly racist. our next panelist is also a comedian going on tour. She's heading to Europe this August and September, performing at the Edinburgh Fringe Fest. As well as in London and Zurich. Wow.
Zurich?
Non-American listeners, go catch this bus face. Kieran Deal.
Thank you so much.
Are you hiding your gold in Zurich?
Yes, obviously.
Gold, yeah.
You know, going to do a little bit of international banking, offshore banking, get it all taken care of.
Buy a $54 salad. Food's really expensive there.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. I will be spending every euro that I make immediately on salad.
Yep.
On lettuce. On lettuce.
I mean, lettuce is expensive. Well, that's super exciting for both of you. I'm really excited to talk about this topic with both of you because I feel like it's just kind of permeated everything.
It will probably explain why we're both going on tour.
Yeah. And why you both got haircuts. Maybe.
Yeah.
That also might be part of it. We're going to talk about the WGA SAG double strike. Now, both of you are members of both.
Double member. I'm an associate member of the WGA, which means I didn't get to vote. So I've only been like during the assault, I had the health insurance. So still wildly grateful for that. That was like a big. It's the senator's health insurance.
It's really good.
It's insane. And it's to have that health insurance is insane.
With the WGA health insurance?
It's very comprehensive.
It is maybe the best health insurance I've ever been on in my life. I didn't even know if I was a writer. And now I'm like, I have to be. I can't afford not to be a fucking writer. I'm a writer now.
Oh, God. Okay, so Megan, where are you at with the strike? How are you feeling about everything?
You know, it's that thing of like, I feel very blessed to have stand-up and to have podcasting, but it's been demoralizing, and I know that I'm in a semi-okay situation because I have a spouse who is employed outside of the WGA, even though he is a WGA member. So when they wrote that they wanted to take our homes, I was like, you're not taking my fucking house. I got a man, you know? It was like that. But it's...
Feminist.
No, very feminist. It's tough, and it definitely has affected my career, which is... in a lot of ways, very tied to my self-worth and how I view myself in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's taken a massive hit at a time when the world's pretty brutal in addition to this.
And mm-hmm. Megan, you just mentioned that they said they were going to take your homes. That was an executive, a studio executive, unnamed, who mm-hmm. said that their strategy for breaking the strike was driving writers and actors out of their homes and making them default on mortgages.
Yes, mm-hmm. and to lose their apartments, so we would come back to the negotiating table desperate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a genuine tactic, and I heard behind the scenes they were split on whether to do that or not, and it sort of galvanized all of us to be like, you want to what? And this is what we're dealing with, and look what we're up against here. So I think it had the opposite effect, and I then heard that they were screaming at each other on a conference call, and it's like, please, can we get that footage?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really for executives to say that publicly, it really makes you go, oh, this strike is going to end and we still have to deal with these crazy people after it.
Yeah, I mean, also, well, here, I'm going to silver lining that quote, okay? The fact that he knows that people are going to lose apartments, and that he, the, whoever this executive is, and I'm assuming it's a he. Yeah.
It feels that way.
It feels
that way.
It's either a he or like a girl who's only friends with guys.
A guy's gal.
Yeah. I just think girls are too much drama. But the fact that they included apartments in the quote acknowledges that they understand that people
we are not wealthy.
Yeah, they're not wealthy right. people. There's like, 150, 200 wealthy people, and everyone else is like, struggling to get by.
I think what's strategically hilarious about that, though, is like that quote came out and that was right before SAG took the vote.
Yeah. Right.
So it felt like, I felt like a little bit of a, even however that happened, it was a very galvanizing thing for SAG. So mm-hmm. I was like, it felt like at least a press play. Do you know what I mean? Like that it was maybe before that. I don't know if all of SAG was like as unified, but then Fran started going nuts. The other thing I'm going to say about this that I did find, Brian Cook came to my show, is a very funny comedian, Kimmel writer, very angry man.
Very
angry.
very
angry. I mean, a friend of Megan's too. Very angry lumberjack-like fellow, And he was like, talked to a mutual friend of ours, Nato Green, who works in union organizing up in San Francisco with like hospitals and police officers, whatever. And he goes, Nato, like, what do you guys do when you are you're on strike, or what are your tactics on the side as the union? And he goes, well, what we do is we try to find the person who's like legitimately in charge, and then we make their lives fucking miserable until they cave, until the person who's really making the decision can do that. And then I'm sorry, because it's like, and then he started saying the address of the president of the AMPTF on the stage of my show again and again and again, which I won't do here because this is a much bigger listenership than the 14 people who come to my local bar show every Thursday. But I did think that there was something hilarious about what he was saying. It was like, that is the strategic tactic of a union leader who has been working for decades in this branch. The WGA has graphs. They have graphs and they have like, they're doing like pickets with musical numbers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's what's interesting. It's like the idea that it ever like was going to be some sort of like gentleman's like rosy thing, I think is kind of a misnomer to what an argument that reaches an impasse even means,
right?
Because there's just so much money on the table for them. So of course it's like, if it got to the point of a strike, of course you're gonna fucking go down kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that I was like, this seems like fucked up, and maybe this isn't something that we should just be doing as a matter of course. Mm-hmm. But reading about executive compensation packages, like Bob Iger. Zaslav or whatever.
Zaslav, yeah.
Yeah. All the villains, in their lair in the Sherman Oaks Galleria, which is where the AMPTP is based, adjacent to a P.F. Chang's.
Which, like, isn't a great complex.
It's really not.
I used to live close to it, and, like, even I was like, I actually don't like this arc light.
There are better galleries.
There are better galleries.
Why not Santa Monica? Why not the P.? Anyway, I'm getting off topic. You read about their compensation packages, and it's like they get paid, $5 million in dollars, mm-hmm. and then like $30 million in stocks. They make more money if they drive the stock price up. And in mm-hmm. order to drive the stock price up, they have to convince investors that the value and the amount of money generated is constantly going to go up. Mm-hmm. And it seems not good. Like that's like an adversarial relationship between the boss and the product.
Right.
Right? Because if like the boss is like kind of a vampire squid trying to extract value, like an internal like private equity guy within a company, then it's sort of like, wait, what? It's weird. It's like giving yourself a tapeworm. Like having your CEO be like a
tapeworm.
No,
it's true. It's true. And the thing about how overly compensated they are is to the earlier conversation about healthcare, that north of 80% of SAG members don't even qualify for the healthcare that you guys were talking about. And to qualify for it, you have to make about $26,000 a year.
Erin, to your point, I do think one of the silver linings, though, is I feel much more educated about the business side of this. Like, as we're sitting here, I know all of us who are now a member of this industry do not come from it. None of us were in the Nepo baby article. Like,
which, to be clear, I find personally very devastating.
Yeah, like, I'm still working class outside of Hollywood.
Still personally upset about that.
And so we're learning different things. And part of it is the compensation of, like, you see these huge numbers and then it's like, well, it's actually broken down this way. And here's the people that are making the decisions. And, you know, I had a show in development at one of these places that is a tech company. And it's like, oh, it came down to, like, how much are we going to be able to integrate the products they want to be selling into mm-hmm. our show? Mm-hmm. And all of that stuff, not on the table in the strike.
Right.
Like, we take a lot of really bad lashings and go, that's okay. We're not even asking for guaranteed healthcare. We're not even asking for AI to not exist.
Right.
We're asking for the barest and barest and barest of minimums of people that are genuinely clinging to the middle class in a city that basically is abolishing the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't even get them to come back to the table. Now, there's rumors they're going to get back to the table on Friday, but then everyone said, well, don't believe these rumors. You know, it's all sort of, they're tricky. They're tricky little fuckers.
Right. Like, there's also this question of value and worth in this country that I think is a more broad question of, like, do we believe that one person's labor, whoever they are, whether, like, even if they created something, do you fundamentally believe that that person is worth, like, 5,000 times more than the people working underneath you? Like,
right.
Like, what is the, like, somebody yeah. is making, you know, I remember talking to somebody, I went on a date, didn't work out, it's okay, everybody just relax, breathe out, but, like, a guy who, like, sold a company to Google at, like, 22, 23 years old, right? And he was saying he's friends with all of, like, the people at Twitter, you know, like, and Jack Dorsey, who sold Twitter, and he goes, and a lot of the engineers who are on the ground floor of that. And he goes, now, Jack Dorsey made, like, 100x more than those other people on the ground
right,
floor.
Right,
right.
People
like,
who built it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, he was like, 5x? Sure. 10x? Sure. You know, but what is the, like, what is our exponential idea of, like, of what we think the inherent value of one individual should ever be?
Mm-hmm, totally.
And that is, I think, a very particularly bizarre question in the United States.
Yeah, right. And I think that's something that the WGA has done really well, and now SAG, but WGA is now going on 90-plus days of the strike, is to go, this is, it's very easy for quote-unquote regular people. My friends back in Chicago, Indianapolis, to go, well, Colin Farrell's picketing, and he seems like he has a great
right.
life, and it's like, absolutely. Colin Farrell is out there because he looks great, and because he raises
so handsome.
Awareness.
So handsome.
We're
so
not
handsome.
Passing.
He used to run shirtless through
oh,
my neighborhood.
So hot.
Through my neighborhood.
Why don't you have footage of that,
we
and why aren't you sharing it online right now?
The hat for Colin Farrell. We're passing the hat for Kieran and me and
right.
for other folks, but it also to say, this is a labor fight. This has...
Thank you for saying me
this
first.
This ties to the Starbucks workers, the Amazon workers. There was a massive march where the WGA and SAG join in with the UPS.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it does not feel lost on me that UPS has avoided a strike
right.
now
mm-hmm.
with everything going on, because I think the top of UPS was like, people are fucking serious.
They're
okay,
serious.
It's, there's a lot of labor... agitation. I'm saying it like with
yeah.
air
no
quotes.
UAW's contract
UAW
is up soon.
ITSE had a labor dispute with like Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of solidarity between the unions associated with Hollywood because it's not just actors and writers and directors
right.
and producers who are making money or whose livelihoods depend on the film industry. It's like people who work in the crew. It's people who cater
yeah.
the
drivers.
Sets. People, yeah, drivers. People who are own like companies where you rent props.
People
from them.
That just own small businesses that writers go to eat
mm-hmm,
at.
Right.
The
you know,
dry
like,
cleaners.
The
like, you know.
Los yeah. Angeles is a massive part of the California economy. California is the fifth largest economy in the world.
I think it's the fourth now. I think we moved up.
So it's like this has trickled down. And I think sometimes I feel like that. I know in 2007, I wasn't in this business. I was in college. And it was like, we heard about the writer's strike constantly. And people still talk about like that Friday Night Lights season. And it was just, and now there's so much news and there's so much craziness happening. But it does feel like, oh, this has been pushed a little bit back because I don't know if people realize how big right. it is.
I mean, the next season of Stranger Things, all the kids are going to have receding hairlines. everything has been pushed back so far that it's like, you know, this affects people's entertainment, but it also affects people's livelihood. It's very expensive to live here. Living here is a requirement of a lot of these industries. Like, you can, you know, Zoom writers' rooms are a thing, but you can't just, like, Zoom into a set. You know, you're working.
And I don't think they're going to be a thing forever. Mm-hmm. I do know people, and Karen, I'm sure you do too, that are leaving the city. That, mm-hmm. you know, we're working writers successful in this business and are like, I can't afford to live here anymore. Mm-hmm.
The big thing I think about is, like, how this country historically busted unions for so long. And what's interesting to me is that the entertainment business is one of the last places with a bunch of strong unions.
Right.
But like, it's, I remember saying it's like the WGA has like that gold standard health insurance. And to me, it's not about like the writers not having that health insurance. It's like, why doesn't everyone in this country yes. have good fucking healthcare?
I mean,
why doesn't everyone have a living wage? Like, these things are, and because tech is permeating so much mm-hmm. of our lives, Apple, like Amazon, these companies are permeating like warehouse workers, like all of right. these people mm-hmm. who also have to make a living, who are also freelance. And the fact that tech is so insular, the people at the top of tech, it's such a bubble, and it's such a young, relatively young group of people who I don't think understand like what it is to not have stuff mm-hmm. because of the business that they are in and the way that their business is compensated for, that creates instability throughout the economy and makes our country weaker.
Yes.
We see a lot of like teachers union action happening right now, especially as like educators are under fire everywhere.
Yeah.
A lot of nurses unions, health workers unions are taking action against this sort of like vampire overlord structure that tries to extract value and take away the quality of the actual company before kind of discarding it as an empty shell. You know, I think that what this conversation, for our listeners who aren't in the entertainment industry or adjacent to it, I really want them to understand, like, we're all kind of, this isn't just an existential threat to us. We're all going through this. There's right. so many of us that are experiencing this at the same time. Well, what do we think about the possibility of other unions taking action within entertainment? Because in 2007-2008, there was the writer's strike, which mm-hmm. caused a rise. It didn't cause a rise in reality TV, but it made the rise of reality TV happen more rapidly. Mm-hmm. People were already interested in reality, but it just became huge because it was all there was. But now people aren't really interested in reality as much anymore. And there's chatter.
Reality's not that cool.
It's not that cool anymore. And there's chatter that there may be some, you know, maybe visual effects people will organize.
Right.
Maybe mm-hmm. Reality would organize. Megan, what do you think about Bethany Frankel's suggestion?
Okay. Yeah, so Bethany, you know, she did this thing of like, well, why are they striking? We should be striking. And it's like, everyone can strike. Yeah. You know, it's not
right.
It's not either or, Beth. All right. So reality TV stars, people that work on reality TV, absolutely should unionize. They're treated worse than all of us. I have friends that work behind the scenes, friends who have been on camera. It is really like you are being paid with exposure and maybe you'll get half a sandwich. Like, they are treated like right. absolute dirt. And there's no way to like say you can't be working 14 hours. Like, it really is inhumane. So I say absolutely unionize, but that doesn't have to be at the expense of us also.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. There's room for everybody.
Everybody can ask for humane treatment mm-hmm. and to be paid what they should be without it being us taking from anyone else.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even if everybody was paid one 500th of a Zaslav every year, that would be $100,000. You know, that's 500.
Right.
You know, that's, I think. Did I do the math
it's
right?
It's pretty close.
It's pretty close.
And the other thing I'll say is like, okay, so let's say pre-streaming, if like I was on How to Get Away with Murder, if you got like one or two or three guest stars a year, that's like, that would have actually been enough with like
right.
residuals and everything. Like, you could have like made a decent living. So it sounds like it's a lot that you're making at a point in time. But then imagine the rest of the year, you're auditioning for free mm-hmm. And there's so much unseen work. You're mm-hmm. developing for free. You know, you're doing,
oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like, you're doing these things like the between Sunnyside and now, like there was at some point a thing about auditions, like, and getting paid for auditions. Mm-hmm. I was like, I would have like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
Do you understand? Like between, and it's like, and you can get so close. It can be down to you and a famous person. And then if you don't get that job, nobody sees that work.
Yep, right.
That's just gone. It didn't exist. And it was just like, what? I like learned to be better at a craft. It's like I'm an adult and a professional. Like, at what point do you get compensated for like just on a basic level for your work? And then the other one is for writers. It used to be, it used to be like 20 weeks of work. Mm-hmm. Now that's been condensed into 12 weeks with like,
at most.
Yeah.
I've heard mini rooms will do 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, which is just like, so you're doing the same amount of work at a pace that is now like breakneck.
And there are fewer people.
There are fewer people.
And there's like one showrunner who's making a decent amount of money, and then there's like two or
who's
three.
Who's having to do a lot.
A ton. Yeah. They're making a decent amount of money, but they are owned by the project.
I was working on something with someone who was on an overall deal that it was lucrative. I do not have an overall deal. I'd love to have one. And the mention of a mini room was sort of brought up. And my reaction was, I'll do it. You know, like, okay, I need this to get made. This is my third attempt at, like, I'll do it. And the person who is financially more stable than me was like, no, we will not be doing that because that's not correct. And that's why we're going to be striking. And it was like, oh, I'm kind of the bad one here that's willing to do this mini room that we are now saying is no, 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 don't do that. But that came from genuine need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and we can't, I don't think it's fair to say that you're part of the problem. I think the problem is a system that encourages.
Yeah, the
of course.
That,
so broke.
You shouldn't be in that position.
That they would even ask you for that is the problem. Not you thinking about saying yes. The question is the problem.
And a place of like, a little bit of like, the fact that you need to make a living or like the desperation. I mean, that's the whole point of having like union minimums so that it's like that question is never posed to you. That's
because
the point of collective bargaining.
Do anything.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
as
we've
a comedian,
stand-up.
I mean, stand-ups will do fucking anything.
We've paid to do stand-up.
It's insane. And what stand-ups will do is just in, like, you know, all 3 hours to drive to a porn set and do 6 minutes of comedy before, you know, people get lubed up. Yeah. I mean, how many minutes? How many minutes do I get? You'll hear somebody ask and you're like, God damn, have some self-respect, you dirty comedian, is what I think.
I dated a stand-up comedian for years.
Sad.
I know.
So it was sad. So sorry.
He's like got a gig working for like a late night show. Well,
okay.
He did.
Okay.
But he's doing fine, I think. But I remember being like, wait, so you just are like gone every night from like 8 until 1 every night just doing work? It's amazing how much work people put in. Also, I want to talk really quickly about development hell. Alyssa knows about development.
Mm-hmm. I'm in development hell. Mm-hmm. Not right now. Right now we're on hold.
Yeah. Which is also hell.
Which is a different kind of hell. Either way, you're not getting paid.
No.
Development hell is something that I think people outside of the industry don't really know. But basically, this is a good situation, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You are a writer that... and your agent, that's a good situation. You have an agent. Your agent comes to you and is like, I have this idea that this production company wanted a writer for. Will you pitch on it? And so then you talk to the company, you pitch on it with them. Usually they're talking to like 3-4 other writers.
It's an audition for a writing job.
An audition for a writing job, yeah. And then they usually have you do 2 or 3 rounds. And then if they pick you, then you get to work for about 6 weeks for free,
at least
developing the idea before you take it out. But this is a good situation because you usually don't have to write the pilot before you take it out in this case.
But sometimes
you do, and you don't get paid at all. And if nobody buys it, then you just don't get paid.
And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. And with movies, you do have to write a 110-page script. And the goalpost moving constant. The first pilot I sold, I asked at 4 different points, now, is this when we get paid? And they were like, no. And so it was like, I kept having these, oh my God, this has never happened. This is great. Uh-huh. Wow.
Right.
We've got this executive producer who's legendary. Do we get paid? No. Uh-huh. Okay, well, now we've got a major studio. Do we get paid? No. Okay, well, now we're going to go to the network. We sold it to a network. Do we get paid?
No. Nope.
Once the deal closes, and that's probably going to take 6 months.
Right. 6 months. Once the deal closes, and then you turn in your pages.
Yeah.
And then they have to accept the pages.
And then have you, again, I'm just going to say, have you guys thought about being rich?
I have.
If you just, if you, like, if,
Kieran,
do you understand?
You're such a simple solution you're to in a difficult problem.
You're in America. Have you thought about just being rich? Because none of this would be an issue if you were just rich. You could just, you know, kind of make it through. You could just push through. It'd
something the strike has opened my eyes to is going, I'm not going to do it, but I totally get why people become Scientologists. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you go straight to the top of, you're going to get parts. Like, people are like, listen, it's this not, is a tough business.
You know
and
what?
I see a way maybe to make 2000, it a little ready.
Maybe in 2005, I think it peaked with Crash. But it used to be that people would literally do that.
Yes.
And they had to close down the Celebrity Center. You can't just like hang out at the Scientology Celebrity Center anymore. If you're like a regular person, you have to have like gold
status.
That
was my whole afternoon plan.
I didn't even know that that was that effective. I would have done that years ago. I thought that was just a myth.
That ship has sailed into the stars.
Dang it.
500 billion light years away.
I think yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so the strikes are ongoing. I think that it's important for us to think about this as an issue of labor solidarity across mm-hmm. industries. Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for listening to us, like, vent.
Yeah.
I have felt, like, really nice because I think my husband is sort of like, I'm too busy with work. And my daughter's like, I'm a baby.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I'm a baby is such a, oh,
it's
God.
Like,
always the
get
excuse
over
to, yeah, I know exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem. How do I walk? Where does the poop go?
The other day, I was like, she was just playing by herself, and I went into her playroom, and she was sitting, and she was going, why?
Oh.
Why?
Why?
Why? And I was like, she's imitating me. We got to take a quick break. I'm going to sign my daughter up for SAG. and then when we come back, we're going to talk Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria. Come on in. There'll be no more napping, as they said at the beginning of Pee-wee's Playhouse, my favorite show when I was a kid. R.I.P. Paul Rubens.
R.I.P.
This one hit me pretty hard,
yeah,
I gotta say. My entire personality was Pee-wee-based as a kid. I have realized. Yeah, we used to do the magic word, scream real loud. Did you guys ever watch that show?
Yeah.
It's the gayest kid show that's ever existed.
I'm going to say this, and I hope you take it 100% as a compliment.
Uh-huh.
You and Pee-wee have, like, a similar aesthetic.
Thank you.
Oh, that is so nice.
You know, I was reading, because I was doing a lot of diving into Pee-wee, and I learned that his suit, when he was, like, first mm-hmm. doing his stage show, which eventually became Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Pee-wee's Playhouse, he deliberately picked it out to be, like, a bad suit, but then fashion changed, and it's actually, like,
chic,
cool looking.
A serve.
Yeah. So it's kind of a serve. Anyway, Paul Rubens.
Pee-wee
was amazing, and there aren't kid shows like that anymore.
No.
That allow kids to be like kind of naughty weirdos, which is a shame. But you can buy it all on Amazon Prime. You can buy all of the Pee-wees.
There we are again.
Yep, there we are. We're back to Plug. Amazon. Or you could just like buy a DVD.
Bootleg it.
Yeah, or bootleg it. I mean, okay, let's do some announcements for the class. Hey, Ohio. We have been talking to you quite a bit directly.
Nonstop, actually.
Nonstop. If you haven't been paying attention, though, now is the time because reproductive freedom and direct democracy are on the ballot on Tuesday, August 8th.
Ohioans are expected to vote on a ballot measure to codify reproductive freedom in the state constitution in November, but
Republicans created another ballot measure for August that would make it way more difficult for constitutional amendments like the abortion protection measure to pass.
Head to votesaveamerica.com/Ohio to get all the information you need to vote no on August 8th or before. You can vote absentee, you can vote mail-in, but August 8th is the last day to vote.
Vote.
Vote no. All right. Time for Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. Alyssa, what do you got?
I feel petty. Guys, I was in the airport yesterday. Ugh. And can anyone explain to me? So I was going through security and the person behind me was like, excuse me, I have to get my suitcase. And I was like, yeah, we all have to get our suitcases. But they were being very precious because they had a very fancy designer suitcase. And guys, what is actually the point of a Louis Vuitton suitcase? What is the point? You are advertising to anyone in the airport that even if what's in your bag is trash, the bag is worth something. And what's crazier are the fake Louis Vuitton bags, because then you're just begging to get your bag snatched. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's not even anything inside. Like, I understand if you have a carry-on. That's, I mean, just because I travel in LL Bean doesn't mean everybody
this
should.
This was a checked bag?
It was a roller bag.
Okay,
it was
a roller bag.
And like, why would you spend that much money on something that is just going to get the shit kicked out of it and increase the chances that it gets stolen?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Right? I was flummoxed.
I mean, it's tacky.
It was tacky.
It's tacky. Alyssa, you've given me a great idea.
Maybe
and
it's
that's
super,
stealing those bags.
Maybe it's super aspirational, but I don't know.
I mean, I feel like it's also you got to prove something.
What are you proving?
You know,
I'm not poor.
My suitcase was free from American Express for being a member for 15 years.
Mine, I have an away. Hello, thank you. I paid for it. But it's like in other countries, you know, they really wrap their suitcase. Like we treat our suitcases like shit. And I've been to other airports and I'm like, what is this station? And it's like the suitcase protection station where you truly wrap it up so it
love
can't
it.
Be hurt.
It's like
and
a I'm whole like, segment oh. on the first episode of 90 Day Fiancé every season.
Yeah, like expensive suitcases, don't do it.
It doesn't make sense to me. And
if you're rich enough to afford an expensive suitcase, you're probably rich enough.
But private.
But if it gets stolen, you can probably just like replace it.
I guess so. Just take your bag on a PJ.
Don't buy anything so expensive that you are in trouble if you lose it.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's probably a good rule of thumb. Kieran.
Yes. Okay. I feel petty. I do. Thank you.
Oh, you are petty.
I think
in
you.
General.
Thank you so much. Okay. I have been wearing the petty sweatshirt a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's
people
a great
love
sweatshirt.
That
here,
on stage.
It's like 95.
Well, the AC is popping.
Yeah,
here.
The copy AC that, is like that. Once you're inside and people look at it and they're like, that really suits you. And I don't know what to make of that, but I take it as a compliment. I was just outside of Chicago in a suburb a few hours outside, and there was a hotel convention going on. Mm-hmm. With it was 100,000 people were there for baseball cards, and it was very scary. I was at the bar, and you're going back, and you love corn, and I love the way Megan's smile is plastered to her face, you know.
But I just, like, you're saying this, I'm like, sounds like a great place to meet men.
I think that sounds fun.
It was not fun. I realized how intolerant I am. And I was, like, there were men there with their little suitcases, their little hard top suitcases. One, I was sitting at the bar eating a hot dog because that's all that was available. And then he took out his one card in plastic. And the other two guys sitting there basically just jizzed their pants. And I was like, what am I doing here?
Okay.
What am I doing here? I don't belong here.
Kieran, if
I felt like an avocado in a sea of hot dogs.
If they weren't trading and celebrating baseball cards, they would be trading and celebrating guns.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to be like, you can't yuck their yum when their yum is truly hurting no one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like the whole Oppenheimer movie's course would have changed if Oppenheimer had only had a hobby like collecting
baseball cards. Yeah. You're just saying, think of it as a distraction that people are just doing until they die. Just give them something to do.
Benevolent side hustle.
Yeah, put a ball of yarn in a hand. You know?
Yes,
get some
let
mittens,
it be.
Let it be. Listen, to be clear, I'm happy that it exists.
But you did not feel
you felt out of place
there.
I just don't want to be around it.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, I mean, you're not mint condition anymore, so.
Smart. I was shook. I learned something about myself that I was like, I don't belong in this place. you know? I think it's interesting to feel a sense of unbelonging, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. Last time I went to church, I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah, and maybe that was also the church you went to. Maybe there'd be a different church where you would feel like, oh, I like the way that they're presenting Jews to me on this one.
That's what happened to me. I went, and it was like a 90-year-old Irish priest that was like, all are welcome here. And I was like, I'm back in. Like, okay, I like church again.
Oh, man. Don't try to steal his pot of gold. Okay, so here's something that I am feeling is my sanity corner this week. The Women's World Cup.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Ongoing. The Team USA not doing great. Made it out of the group stage. I think we got to play Sweden in the knockout round.
But they're keeping it together. Sunday.
On Sunday, yeah. So they tied with Portugal. They tied with the Netherlands. They beat Vietnam. But what has been most exciting to me is watching the other teams play. Even if the U.S. doesn't, I would like the U.S. to win. Obviously.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
But it is so exciting to see women's soccer being played at such a high level by so many different teams. Mm-hmm. Like, I watched the Colombia-Germany game.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the opportunity to watch a replay of that game, watch it. Watch it from minute one all the way to the end. It is one of the most thrilling games I've ever seen. Colombia has an 18-year-old girl who is their star. She is 5'3", doesn't appear to sweat at all. She's so fast. Her footwork is incredible. The team was ranked 25th in the world. They played number 3 Germany. It was like a David versus Goliath situation. Germany played hard. Nobody was diving. Nobody was whining. Everybody was like really intense, but not in like a dirty, you know, men's soccer kind of a way. It was so enjoyable. Just top, front to back, enjoyable. I can't wait for the knockout round stage, not only for the USA, but just for all of the teams playing soccer at such a high level. It is so exciting. Also, like, you know, people gripe about, like, the difference between watching women and men play sports. And I think, like, when you watch basketball, it's like watching almost two different types of game. Like, there are women who play basketball who are, like, super fast and can jump really high.
They're also playing defense.
Exactly.
And the men don't.
Yeah, the men don't really play defense. But it's just, it feels like a different game. I feel like with women's soccer, it's the quality of the game is fairly equal. Like, there's,
I think better. Yeah. I just think they're, like, more elegant. Like, just the way they do stuff and the way they move their bodies. And and the storyline. Like, I saw Alex Morgan post yesterday that her daughter arrived. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, my God, yeah, these are moms.
Yeah.
You know? And she was like, my heart is full. Like, she wasn't even doing, like, well, now I'm going to fucking be a mom. And headbutt a ball.
Yeah. I hope she's got somebody to, like,
I'm
be
sure
in charge.
She does,
to wrangle.
But, like, you almost just see they have, like, fuller, richer lives, I think women do.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Rodman's daughter
Trinity.
On the U.S. team.
Really?
Yeah,
yes. She is like that.
She's 22.
She's young.
Young.
And she's awesome. And it's so fun to watch. And if you haven't been paying attention, the knockout round starts this weekend. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage everybody to watch. And also, it's in Australia, so that's like at weird times, but they replay them like constantly.
Yeah.
So there's not like other sports happening right now except baseball. And so it's just, it's very available.
It's like the middle of the summer baseball.
Yeah. It's like before it matters, really.
Right.
So I would recommend watching the FIFA Women's World Cup to any listeners who haven't been cluing in. It's really good. All right, Megan.
Well, I'm going to talk about baseball because there actually is something great going on. Shohei Ohtani is putting together the greatest baseball season ever, maybe since Babe Ruth. But he pitches. He's an incredible pitcher, and he hits home runs. Like, the man is so hot.
What team is he on?
The team is called the Los Angeles Angels, but they play in Anaheim.
Isn't it the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim?
They used to be the Anaheim Angels, and then they tried to rebrand it. So
Shohei, 2 hours outside of Los Angeles Angels.
Shohei Ohtani, hunk, so fun, just like what he is doing is historic. I saw a tweet yesterday that was like, of all the terrible times to be living, just be glad that you get to live in the era of Shohei Ohtani. Like, he is genuinely a joy, loves it. He was going to probably be traded, and then the Angels were like, listen, we're not going to trade him. We're going to try and bring some assets here. So they're bringing him some help. He's never played in a playoff game. Neither has Mike Trout, his teammate, who has been MVP of Major League Baseball, and no one knows what he looks like.
I can't picture him.
No, like, they used to do this joke at the ESPYs where they would cut to just a random man in the audience and be like, Mike Trout, and it was like, not Mike Trout. So it's It's really exciting. He's so handsome. I don't even like baseball. Like, you know, I like the Dodgers. I like going to games. I love hot dogs. I love butts. But he really is something that, like, has made this kind of stale, out-of-touch sport really resonate and popular. He's an international player. He loves California. It has a very large Asian population. So even if he does leave the Angels, we're really hoping he comes up and maybe plays for the Dodgers because he loves being in California.
Oh, good. That would be, just don't go to the Giants or the Padres.
No, I don't think he'll go to the Giants. Yes, hunk. I'm going to – yes, hunk. Get a full body picture. Full body.
I'm pulling up pictures of him.
Oh, my gosh. So fun. He wears this, like, really cool – yes, look at him. Number 17. That's my lucky number.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. Look, he looks like his angles are – he looks like a dancer. He moves like a dancer. He's, like, so elegant.
Pitchers don't usually hit at all because they're not good at it. So yeah. They usually pitch and then they're done.
Well, that's why the American League had a DH.
Yes, he is pitching and then is leading the team in home runs.
That's amazing. Good for him. Okay, we're out of time. Yeah. We're out of time for this panel live in studio. This was so fun. Alyssa, come out every single week.
And
every
we have week. Drinks later tonight.
We have drinks later tonight. Oh, man. That's good. I hope no giant news event happens between now and then.
No.
Knock
Jack
wood.
Smith, take the day off.
Yeah, please chill out, Jack Smith. We've heard enough from you. Oh, my goodness. You know what would be a good day to take out? Your Mueller time shirt and wear it ironically. Yeah. because there was merch for that.
There was
merch nothing
for that.
Burger. Okay, and that's the show.
What a great show.
Thank you so much to Kieran and Megan for stopping by live in studio. This was so much fun. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die. Evan Kleinman, thank you so much for stopping by. And listeners, thank you for listening. We love you. You're the greatest. Don't tell other pods, but we think our listeners are the best in the biz.
The best.
Absolute best in the biz. If you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com for tips, compliments, notes, just, you know, be
anything.
Nice. Just anything.
Do be nice, though.
Do be nice, though, because we do all read it. And if you're mean, we make fun of
we'll
you.
We'll group chat you.
We'll group chat you, and it won't be kind. There will be more Hysteria next week.
There always is.
Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okulate, Amelia Montooth, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram and Twitter for more original content, host takeovers, and other community events.
From time to time, we like to share a recommendation of a podcast we think you'd like as a listener of Hysteria. This week, we're sharing a podcast for anyone who loves to explore places both close and far from home, Women Who Travel from Condé Nast Traveler.
Join host Lale Erikoglu each week as she shares her 10 years of experience as an endlessly curious and passionate global journalist, as well as the stories of self-identifying women travelers from around the globe. Though travel and adventure has historically been publicly claimed by men, boo, Women Who Travel creates a space for anyone excited about global issues and exploring places both close and far from home.
From the depths of the Patagonia wilderness to walks through Europe's oldest cities, Women Who Travel immerses you in the travel experience featuring sound from around the world alongside guest interviews and listener-submitted audio diaries. This tableau of sound brings the inspiration and joy of this community of travelers to wherever you're listening from. Women Who Travel is available now wherever you listen.